Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday evening, May 10, 2009. It is now 8:01 p.m., and we are going to go immediately to our call board, and I believe our guest is with us right now. Hold on.
Hello.
Good evening, Devi.
DV.
Okay, I'm awfully sorry. I assumed
okay.
It was Devi because it would be like Debbie.
No, that's okay. It's a common way of people mispronounce it, but I'm used to it, so don't even think about it.
Okay, well, let me say I want to thank you so much for being on our program. I was really excited about you accepting our invitation to be our guest. I've heard so much about you. I've been to your website. You are one remarkable woman.
Well, thank you.
I did not introduce you yet. I wanted you to call in a few minutes after the hour so I had time. Let me do that right now.
Oh, that's okay. You can put me on hold.
No, it's okay. You can listen to me. I promise I won't say anything bad. Folks, we have...
That's okay. It's Mother's Day. I'm pretty mellow.
Oh, out. That's it. Happy Mother's Day. Folks,
you.
We are pleased to have as our guest, D.V. Kidd. She's a journalist, lecturer, most importantly, an activist and author of two books, Why a Blind America and, Bankrupt America and Blind Loyalty. Moreover, she's the founder and director of the Project on Winning Economic Reform, better known as POWER, P-O-W-E-R. This project is an ongoing educational effort and is not an organization. POWER is a First Amendment grassroots effort to educate, motivate Americans to the mechanisms bringing America to ruin. DV's project distributed two booklets she authored, Why a Bankrupt America and Blind Loyalty. She has made guest appearances more than 2,500 times on talk radio shows, plus countless personal speaking appearances. She ran for Congress in 1994 and 1996 and is also the author of four other published books dealing with construction financing and government systems. What I'd like to add is that she is a federal whistleblower. While at Peterson Air Force Base, she filed a fraud, waste, and abuse against her own job. The three-ring circus that followed is sadly all too typical of what happens to those who step forward with the truth. I applaud you, and good evening.
Thank you, and good evening.
You've had a very, very colorful career. And I always like to open with an open focus question, and this has got to be one of the easiest open focus questions because it's going to be the titles of your book, Why a Bankrupt America?
Well, because of the central bank and irresponsible spending from one Congress to another to another to another. I mean, look at every single day, Congress continues to write hot checks because there's no money in the Treasury. The People's Purse is overdrawn $11.1 trillion. And yet, these fools and crooks out there in Congress continue to try to sell $2 billion worth of our toxic debt
right
to our enemies and other foreign countries. It's all because of the monetary system. And of course, there's a great element of greed involved.
Well, let me play devil's advocate, and what I hear when people call or they write this program, they say, well, we need a central bank. Without a central bank, you'd have all of these renegade banks around confiscating with depositors' money. Banks would close. It would be like the Wild West all over again, and everyone would lose all their savings. How dare you criticize the central bank that's been around since 1913, actually, and that's done, in my opinion, a very good job.
Well, I can't imagine why anybody who has any understanding of the monetary system under which the Federal Reserve exists, number one and most importantly, is that it's unconstitutional.
Right.
Congress never had the authority to give away the power that they and they alone, by authorization of the Congress, to coin and print the money themselves. Second of all, prior to 1913, when you had this cabal of crook senators who were in bed with the international banking cartels, what they did was simply turn over the wealth of the country to a group of individuals who own this private bank. Second of all, before we had the central bank, it wasn't the Wild West by any stretch of the imagination. This country grew and grew and became very prosperous. President Andrew Jackson fought to get rid of the second central bank.
Right.
And the people were so glad that they turned around and reelected him by a landslide. But when you understand how the central bank works, how they skim about $1.5 trillion out of your pocket every year with this interest, and also without the central bank, which we do not need, we've never needed, to control and steal from us, Congress would not be able to run up these $1 trillion debts in their budgets. There would not be these endless, mindless wars of national liberation or wars of nation building. There would not be a $900 billion worth of social spending. Congress would have their hands tied to adhere to only the areas of legislation under Article 1, Section 8 that they're allowed to. That means no federal Department of Education, no Environmental Protection Agency. These monstrous cabinets do nothing but suck down hundreds of billions of dollars a year that benefit the United States in no way. It has only made things worse. In the education department, we used to have the finest educational system in the world. Then the Federal Department of Education came into being. College tuition in the first 5 years went up 2,000%. Because colleges and universities across this country suddenly discovered they had your blank checkbook in
right.
their hands. Agencies like the EPA, one-size-all environmentalism doesn't work for 50 states that have different needs, and every state of the union already has an EPA, not to mention the fact that the EPA derives their jurisdiction from international treaty. And that's how these crooked senators got around the Constitution. They did it through treaties. So it's truly a mess, but all of this is enabled because of this privately owned and locally controlled consortium of corporations
right.
for which you and I cannot be part of. We cannot own Class A stock in the central bank. That is exclusively for the banking houses, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, the Queen Juliana of the Netherlands, people like that. They're
right.
the ones who own stock in our central bank.
Right, so we in effect have to buy our money from the Fed, and then they charge
yes.
us interest. So we in effect eventually are just slaves to the Fed because we have to work to pay the interest.
That's exactly
yeah.
right. It's an insane system.
Right.
It should have been, you know, gotten rid of a long, long time ago.
Now, and as you. By the way, I did not mention, folks, that we would love for you to call in. Our call-in number is 646-652-4620. Let me repeat that, 646-652-4620. We are pleased to have as our guest, D.V. Kidd, and we are going to talk about everything tonight, so call in with any question whatsoever.
As a matter of fact, would you allow me to give you a quick quote from a congressman on just what we were talking about?
Please do.
Yes. Lewis McFadden, he was a champion of exposing what happened with the passage of the Federal Reserve Act. And on May 23, 1933, he launched an indictment against the robbers they called the banker barons. But this is what he said. He said, "Mr. Chairman, we have in this country one of the most corrupt institutions the world has ever known. I refer to the Federal Reserve Board and the Federal Reserve Banks, hereinafter called the Fed." And he goes on to, you know, just absolutely skewer them. But it goes a little further. And I wanted, that was McFadden. I wanted to find the one with, here it is. This is Wright Tatman. He was murdered. So was Lewis McFadden. Lewis, getting them all mixed up here. But anyway, This is what Wright Patman said. It's in the Congressional Record, September 29th, 1941, on page 7582. He said, now take the Panama Canal bonds, because this is a really good example of how insane the system is. He said, now take the Panama Canal bonds. They amounted to a little less than $50 million, $49,500,000. By the time they are paid, the government will have paid $75 million in interest in bonds of less than a $50 million stake. So the government is paying out $125 million in interest to obtain the use of $49,500.
No.
This is the way it's worked all along. Now, I believe the system should be changed. The Constitution of the United States does not give the banks the power to create money. The Constitution says that Congress shall have the power to create money, but now under our system, we will sell bonds to commercial banks and obtain credit from those banks, but we do not receive any money for the bonds.
Right.
I believe the time will come when people will demand that this be changed. I believe the time will come in this country when they will actually blame you and me and everyone else connected with this Congress to sit idly by and permit such an idiotic system to continue. I have talked to the Secretary of the Treasury and members of the Federal Reserve Board and other people who are supposed to know about the money system of this country. They know this can be done easily and conveniently, and it will save money. But their one reply is, quote, it will have a bad psychological effect. Well, I do not think it will have a bad psychological effect to save the people 50% of the national debt.
Right.
I do not think it would have a bad psychological effect to save the people over $1 billion a year in interest. I do not think it would be, I don't think it would be bad, unquote. So, I mean, he sums it up so well. And in the end, what did Congress do? They handed over the Panama Canal to a banana republic with the communist Chinese running the show. So that $125 million that was paid in interest off the sweat of the American people, you might as well have burned it.
That's right.
Because they simply gave away the canal.
Right. Well, you know, this whole subject, and not only this one, but just about every subject that I approach, it just seems that there are a very, very small group of people who really understand, they grasp this. But for the most part, most people don't even want to hear this because they don't want to talk politics or religion. You know, the old adage, I'll talk about anything but politics and religion. And I always answer, if you take politics and religion out, we have nothing to talk about. But that's another story. I digress. But when you have so many people who are not only ignorant, disinformed, uninformed, but refuse to learn, even as they progress in age, we have this battle. Take the situation with Ron Paul and his campaign. He has been discredited enormously for saying exactly what you're saying. And I guess my question is, how could so many people in Congress be so corrupt or be corrupted so quickly once they are there that we only have a handful, if we have that many in Congress, that will stand up and speak for the people? And what's your response to that?
Well, my response is that most of Congress, I would say 99% of them, they have no concept or understanding of the monetary system. Some of those people are actually functionally illiterate. I've watched them on C-SPAN. Corrine Brown out of Florida, I've watched her attempt to read something out of a newspaper clipping, and she could barely read it. The woman's functionally illiterate. Some of them knew what was going on. Dick Armey knew. I know he knew.
Yeah.
Without spending an hour telling you why, but he knew. How do they get so corrupt? I think that there's a file kept on every member of Congress. I think that some of them are probably dirty or have done things like Congressman Vitter out of Louisiana got caught servicing whores, or excuse me, prostitutes.
Right.
They call themselves service workers. But, mostly it's ignorance. And because they are so powerful, these members of Congress, they are powerful. They are the so-called leadership of the world, this body called Congress. But they're corrupt. I mean, look at Dennis Hastert. That guy barely got out of town, I think, before there was going to be some kind of investigation.
Right.
Dennis Hastert was a crook, an out-and-out crook. And now he's living high on the hog in retirement while you and I and our children go to work every day, and the sweat from our labor goes
right
to support him high on the hog out there on his farm with his $20,000 little tractor he rides around on. And he should have been indicted a long time ago. Dianne Feinstein, I can tell you right now, we've got enough on her to put her in prison forever.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Nope, 10 years ago we tried in California to get the FBI, to get the California Attorney General to look at the evidence that would put her butt in federal prison. And the response, every door was slammed in our face because she's, quote, too powerful.
Yeah. You know, Nancy Pelosi just surprises the heck out of me. She's got to be the dullest knife in the drawer. The woman has never said anything that was logical, coherent, profound, or however you want to categorize it. Everything she says is so simplistic and never approaches solving the problem. And how did she get where she's going? How did she ever get there? I can never believe that. I mean, I can do a heck of a better job than she does.
I can tell you exactly how. The woman is an imbecile. That is the
yeah, she comes across as, you're right, as an imbecile.
She is an imbecile, but she's very wealthy. Her and her husband, the tax return, they're worth $55 million.
Ah, okay? I didn't know that.
So she also is in a congressional district that is a huge homosexual and lesbian base. All right? San Francisco, that whole area. That's what she represents.
Oh, okay? I see.
They love her. Mm. And we have to remember that the electronic voting and counting machines have been robbing us
right
of true and fair elections for a long time. So you have an imbecile with the correct plumbing out there for all of these featherhead, empty-headed women who go,
right,
oh, God, that get so excited because they're so empowered.
Right.
And that's
right
why the machines keep her in there.
Yeah.
Because she's a useful fool, but she's become a powerful, useful fool.
Right.
And she doesn't even know that if something goes wrong, the first person's backside that gets kicked under the bus is going to be hers.
Yeah. I don't think she realizes that. You know.
No, she's too... There's no sparks between her ears.
Yeah, I assume that you are sort of in line with the Ron Paul campaign to liberty, right? For liberty, right? I assume.
Well, I support it. You know, I don't, and Ron Paul knows this. I just had a meeting with him in Washington, D.C. last month, and it wasn't about anything. It was just some complaints, a couple of friends of mine, about the looting of the National Archives.
Right.
Literally, truckloads of documents are being stolen. But he knows that I didn't agree with everything that he said. I completely disagree with the free trade position that he took. But I respect and admire what he's done, and I believe he would have made an excellent president.
Yeah, yes, so I, yeah.
And, you know, we know the media's tried to marginalize him, and they were very successful. And some of the people who went out of their way, like Glenn Beck, to call Ron Paul supporters something akin to domestic terrorists.
Yeah,
people
right
have a short memory because now he's their hero.
Yeah, that's right.
Glenn Beck.
Yeah, that's right. Glenn Beck is becoming. He calls himself a libertarian, which he's really not yet. But I mean, he does call himself a quasi-libertarian, which is a far cry from where he was a few years ago.
Well, maybe he's had an epiphany, but I'll be 60 next month. I've been around a long time. I've been in this fight 24/7 for almost 20 years. And somebody who was on a liberal network like CNN's Headline News and suddenly jumps over to Fox News, which is owned by the king of pornography, Rupert Murdoch, who gets a $50 million contract, I have a problem.
Yeah.
I have a problem.
Yeah. You have to question that. A friend of mine called the other day. He's a gun guy, you know, he buys and sells guns and whatever, you know, and he's, you know, always been very concerned about, you know, federal government, this and that, and, you know, he's not an activist or anything, but he's just conscious of what's going on, and he's getting really kind of nervous now. In fact, he, you know, attends all the gun shows and he sells guns and stuff, and he said, you know, Joe, he says, what can we do? I said, I don't think there's anything we can do. I said, quite frankly, I said, unless we get, you know, all of these organizations, all of the activists under one tent, we're going to have a very, very difficult time. And I told him, I wasn't very optimistic about the whole thing. And it's unfortunate because I consider you a freedom fighter. If anything else, I mean, overall, you're a freedom fighter. I don't know if I consider myself a freedom fighter. I have a radio program that I talk about that, but maybe you want to classify me as a mini freedom fighter or a sub freedom fighter or something like that. But
anybody,
you know,
pursuing the truth is a freedom fighter.
Yeah, I mean, this is all I do, you know, and I read stuff all day long, and I belong to all these organizations, et cetera, et cetera. But the point being is that there are so many of us. But we are so splintered. I don't know the answer to this, DV. How we get, you know, all of these literally tens of thousands or thousands of organizations and hundreds of thousands of people and maybe millions of people like-minded who are saying, yes, there's something wrong under one tent. If we're splintered, we go nowhere. I mean, that was my conclusion with him, and he didn't sound too enthusiastic after we had our conversation. But what's your take on that?
Well, we're really in not much of a different position than back in 1775 when Patrick Henry gave his Give Me Liberty speech.
Yeah.
Back then, a very large percentage of the colonials, their financial well-being and physical well-being was dependent upon the crown or King George. The smaller number of people, they had a vision, a dream, you know, to set up birth a free republic. So we have the same problem today. And as the economy gets worse and worse and worse, more and more people are going to the government trough out of desperation. But we do have better tools. You know, back then it was up to Paul Revere and 16-year-old girls like Sybil Ludington to ride through the night to warn against the British.
Yeah.
But we have the internet, which was the biggest strategic tactical error that the destroyers ever made, was to put these computers out there for the American people,
right,
because it's been our cannon for truth.
Right.
There's no way to bring together all these groups and organizations, but we have crossed the Rubicon, and Americans better adjust their thinking that the worst is yet to come. This is just a lull in the storm right now. This whole situation with Obama's birth certificate is going to blow one of these days. And it's not going to be pretty, but it has to be done.
I was going to ask you about that. I want your take on it. I know very little about it, so I have no opinion about that particular subject.
Well,
he was
never constitutionally eligible, and he knows it. His handlers know it. Nobody in their right mind, and even some of his staunch supporters at this point in time, are beginning to question why he has spent roughly $945,000 to keep his birth certificate and all of his records sealed. Now, even if the birth certificate shows that he was born in Hawaii or Nebraska or Kenya, it still does not address the core issue. If it shows that he's born in Kenya, all it will prove to millions of us, what we already know, that he's a pathological liar and a narcissist.
Yeah.
But the core issue is his father's citizenship. Even his own website that hawks for him, factcheck.org, they printed it right there under the fake birth certificate, I believe it's a forgery, last June of 2008, where it said they came out and said that Obama's father was a British citizen under the British Nationality Act of 1948. Obama was born with dual citizenship, and it doesn't matter how many birth certificates he can produce or not produce. The bottom line is, if you read the British Nationality Act of 1948, he was born with dual citizenship, so he can never, ever be a natural-born citizen at birth. And my column last Monday, I have a new one coming out tomorrow, but my column last Monday on newswithviews.com, I've laid this out again to some degree, but I put together all of the legal arguments into one file sequentially so that people can read the law, the historical documents, the testimony of the senators who wrote the 14th Amendment. Number one, that's a very important issue here, because too many people say, oh, well, his mother's a U.S. citizen. It doesn't matter. Both parents have to be U.S. citizens at the time of his birth. So I put it all together. I've made this as easy as possible. Plus, Leo D'Onofrio, who had one of the first lawsuits, gave me permission to put his briefs on audio. So there's links to that in this master file, so that if you're busy, you can just download it to a CD and listen while you drive. These are the arguments that were submitted to not only to the state court and the appellate court, but also to the U.S. Supreme Court. All of the historical documents that's been dragged out of the National Archives, so that people will understand when they read the yellow journalism out there by fake reporters and journalists who say, well, this case was thrown out by and decided by all the courts in the Supreme Court. Not a single one of the 38 cases filed was ever heard on merit. They were all dismissed for, quote, standing, which can be anything, any time the judge wants, or a technicality. But not a single case was ever heard on merit.
Well, you know, again, you know, skeptics would say, if that was the case, why the Republican machine, which is gets really brutal politically, why wouldn't the Republican machine make that an issue during their campaign, putting to rest, you know, who was going to win the campaign? I mean, it would have been a shoo-in then for McCain, obviously.
Why do you think this? The $64,000 question is why did the Republicans sit around and say nothing? Because Dr. Orley Tate, who's brought, you know, the most attention to this issue, she is getting ready to file another lawsuit. There's some 124 plaintiffs. About 100 of them are either retired three-star generals, or many are active duty in Iraq or active duty in the United States. But there's 11 of them that are Republicans who are elected representatives in state legislatures. So these folks have the testosterone and the estrogen to stand up and demand the proof, whereas not even Ron Paul. I have no idea. I got all kinds of email. Why won't Ron Paul? I have no idea. As far as I'm concerned right now, that's, you know, a side issue. They didn't question it. When the counting of the Electoral College votes came, they didn't question that, and they should have. It was nothing but a horse and pony show. I don't know why. But, you know, I always say you have to stay focused, and the focus right now has to be to get a court of law, and we believe a quo, what's called a quo warranto, out of the district court in Washington, D.C., is the way to force this issue, because the U.S. attorney out there, Jeffrey Taylor, he's a very straight shooter, this guy. He's an unusual. He has the power to bring this at the trial. There's, you know, that particular statute that was written by Congress for Washington, D.C., for any elected official, including a president, who, quote, is an usurper, can be removed under a quo warranto.
Well, what's... How is this going to progress, if it's going to progress at all? What's happening with that issue?
I think it is going to build so much. It's going to continue to build to the point where Obama's handlers are going to have to do something. They either kick him under the bus, or there's some contrived event in the United States, something to distract people's attention. Oh, my God, who cares about it? Because the media has been very good about focusing only on the birth certificate. They're not, you know, they don't address the real problem.
That's right.
None of them go... Yeah, so we know what the game is, but things are going to get worse. I know that, the stock market had a good day. It doesn't have anything to do with it. When you have, you know, 8 or 10 million people unemployed, and 20% of all U.S. mortgages are underwater, okay, and the states are going bankrupt, and the states cannot even process tens of thousands of unemployment claims, the economy is not, despite what helicopter Ben Bernanke lied about the Friday, that we are not going to recover towards the end of this year. We will be lucky to see anything happen before 2011. And by that time, you're going to have a nation of very angry people.
Right. Let's take a second just for station identification. Folks, this is Joe Cristiano. You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Our call-in number is 646-652-4620, 646-652-4620. 652-4620. We are pleased to have as our guest Miss Devi Kidd. And we're just talking about everything and anything this evening, so please call in with your questions or comments. It seems that there's a real disconnect between what Ben Bernanke or mainstream media says about the economy and what is really happening. The government puts out one set of, well, many statistics. There's about 30 or 40 of them, you know, leading, lagging, coincidence indicators. They are all going down. They continue to sink. The only good ones are like the amount of M1 money supply, which is not a good indicator. And yet, with all of these indicators retreating, very few are expanding. Bernanke gets up there and says, you know, it looks like we've met a bottom and things are going to get better. And there's no indication of that whatsoever. And all the reports that I've read from the American Institute of Economic Research et al. All say the opposite.
Well, back in July of 2007, old helicopter Ben, because I saved the article and the quote, he said that the economy was doing wonderfully. Those are his words.
That's right.
The recession was already in its early stages, and only a blind man couldn't have seen it. As for the media, of course, you know that it depends on what media you're looking at. But when you want to talk about NBC and, you know, that whole crowd of people, the big newspapers, they're intellectually lazy.
Right.
They don't do any research.
That's right.
They just take what AP or Reuters or some mouthpiece standing there at the podium at the White House or listening to liars like Bernanke and Paulson, and they just take it, oh, yeah, oh, okay, well, I'll just print that. And they've done the American people a great disservice, and because of that and because of the Internet educating a huge percentage of Americans, the support for their media is not just dwindling, it's dying.
Right.
Because we will not patronize them, we won't buy their product, and therefore we don't see the advertising, and those advertising revenues are drying up. As a matter of fact, when I drove out to Washington, D.C. last month, for the first time, and I've been traveling around this country for almost 20 years, and I don't fly, so I drive. For the first time, I saw billboards after billboards across several states in the South. Empty. Rent this space for 50% off.
Right.
And I went, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. DV, we have a caller. Let's take a call for a second, okay? Person's been hanging on here for quite some time. Caller, you're on the air. Your first name, where you're calling from, please, and your question or comment. Thank you for calling Liberty Talk Radio.
You're welcome. Ray from Pennsylvania wants to talk to that great freedom-loving redhead.
Hi, Ray.
How are you?
Oh, just kind of actually had some friends over for Mother's Day barbecue, had shish kebab and all of that, so I'm sitting here happy.
I'll be right over. Thank you.
Oh, good. You can help me with the dishes when I get off the air.
You've got a job now, Ray.
I really took my... Never argue with the woman, right, Joe?
Well, right.
Well, you know, I have one of those newfangled things they call a dishwasher, so...
Joe, I'm the one that sent you that never argue with a woman, by the way.
Okay.
Anyway, there are two questions that I have here. One has to do with this issue about Obama and his citizenship. Really not about his citizenship. That's been in question. That's been in the courts and probably will continue to be in the courts. What about McCain's citizenship? There was always a question in my mind about that. Was that ever settled? And then I have another question for you.
Okay. When Leo D'Onofrio, who was the first case to hit the Supreme Court, Leo actually filed to prohibit McCain, Obama, and I believe the guy's name is Calero, from being on the ballot in the state of New Jersey. Calero was easy. He was cleared in five different states before they could do any more damage could be done because he was born in Nicaragua. McCain, this gets a little legalese, but McCain goes around telling everybody that he was born, you know, on a military base in the Panama Canal, which mm-hmm. was under the control of the United States, when in fact he was not. He was born in a hospital in Colon, Panama, which was not under the control of the United States. And that disqualifies him for all kinds of different reasons, which is in the master file that I just mentioned. It's in my column last Monday, News with Views, to scroll about three-quarters of the way down. It says the complete file. If you click on it, Leo goes into all of that about McCain. And, of course, I've written about the efforts by members of Congress, which was so odd a year ago at this time. You had Clinton and Obama and McCain and a few others, McCaskill, another empty-headed female out of the state of Missouri, who were bending over backwards to try to legislate the citizenship of McCain and Obama at the same time. It was bizarre.
So, of course, it was a big red flag. So in other words, let me be very simplistic. Probably the Republicans were not going to make an issue out of Obama because they did not want Obama to make an issue out of McCain.
That's the way I read it. Absolutely. You just answered my question too, Ray. Thank you.
And the second question I have here is about this whole issue of dual citizenship. I really have a problem personally. I don't know about what the Constitution says, but anybody holding public office, anybody, I don't care if you're a mayor, I don't care if you're Ron Emanuel or anybody else, should people, I'll just ask the question, not to make it one way or the other, but should people who hold a dual citizenship in any country, regardless of whatever it is, be eligible to be to serve in public office?
In public office, I don't believe so, for the same reasons that the framers of the Constitution grandfathered in the clause about natural born at birth. Mm-hmm. They felt very strongly, even though they themselves would not qualify pre-Constitution, they wanted to ensure that anybody who served as president, their loyalty would be hopefully cemented and ingrained because their parents were both U.S. citizens for 14 years before the birth of the child. And we know from Leo's incredible incredible research down in the National Archives that Chester Arthur was constitutionally ineligible, and he lied. And the proof is there. It's in black and white. There's no getting around it. He burned a lot of his papers, but he didn't get all of the newspaper articles or the records about his father. His father was came through Canada. He was not a U.S. citizen long enough. Chester Arthur was the first usurper president. It's a shame. But there, you're talking about the most powerfully seated public elected official in the world, supposedly. That's what Americans like to say, but I'm sure the Russians feel the same about the black cardinal, Vladimir Putin. But in any event, I don't believe that you should have dual citizenship if you're Secretary of State or anything like that. Your loyalty must be to your country.
I have a
can't split it like
that. Yeah, I have a very, very difficult time, even people that I know that are able to vote in other elections in other countries, and even though they're not elected to public office, it's like, well, if you're an American, why are you interested in, let's say, who's the prime minister of Bulgaria or whoever it is?
Right.
It's like, well, why are you interested? You left that country. You came to the United States looking for a better life. Just like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about the old countries.
That's the difference between when my parents' parents, my grandparents, came here from Palermo. You know, they had to wait 3 years to get on the boat, and they had to have a certificate that was less than 30 days old, that they had been cleared from tuberculosis or any diseases like that. They had to take an English proficiency test before they could get on the boat. When they got to America, they kissed the ground. And my mother and my uncle were taught English first and Italian second. And the same way with my grandparents on my father's side, they fled Germany from Munich when Hitler was starting to flex his muscles because they knew. But my father can't speak a word of German, even though his parents were fluent in it. They wanted him to be an American. And I'll give Whoopi Goldberg this. I actually caught her just in a segment years ago where she said that they were talking about hyphenated names for people's nationalities. And she said, you know what? She says, I'm not an African-American. She says, I was born in this country. I wasn't born in Africa. I'm an American.
There you go.
I thought, whoa, okay.
Yeah, and we don't have to, we're not xenophobic or we're not...
No, it doesn't have anything to
We just love the principles of the Constitution and what this country stands for. And
if you have dual citizenship, then to me that doesn't signal that your loyalty is to our constitutional republic.
Right.
That you're willing to divide yourself. And like you said a second ago, if this is your country, whether it's adopted or whether you're born here and your parents were born someplace else, we're all immigrants except for the native Indians who were here first. This is why can't you be proud of just being an American? Yeah, I'm an Italian-German, ancestry, but I'm an American. I don't run around with hyphenated names. I don't know if you've ever heard John Wayne's CD. It's wonderful. It's kind of corny. But he has one little vignette on there where he talks about hyphenated names like that divide rather than build bridges, mm-hmm. And it was really very touching what he said.
What we're doing in America is really not teaching people about the principles and the beauty of the Constitution. I really don't care what you call yourself. If you want to call yourself something hyphenated, I really don't care. All I know is that if you really, really love this country and you love the principles in which we're supposed to have our free society, it doesn't matter if you're black, you're white, you're Hispanic, you're whatever you are, just as long as you practice, the decency and the what's enshrined there. And that's the beauty of it. Otherwise, we're the ugly Americans throughout the world, because here we are exporting some type of, corporate Americanism, and it's really an ugly thing. We're not teaching the real principles of just leave me alone type of existence,
Yeah, but this is the result of multiculturalism in America, where the people do not look up what words mean. Oh, I'm for diversity, but do you know what diversity means? It means different. So why are you celebrating different instead of unified as a common people with a common language?
Well, this is the difference between being different and being an individual. Being an individual, we leave each other alone, let everybody pursue their own type of existence, as long as you're not going to hurt somebody, you're not going to harm somebody, you're not going to steal from them. We go out into the marketplace and we deal with one another all the time. We don't really care who a person is, and this is the real, that's the real America that I really would like, not so much about putting everybody into little boxes like they're going to put on the census form coming up. It's like, well, are you Hispanic, are you black, are you Asian, or are you Hawaiian, or whatever. Well, I really would like everybody to check off the other box and just put the word human, please.
Yeah, that's right. I agree. Back in Ray, I just want to mention.
Thank you very much. Oh. And I'm gonna get going. I'm gonna listen on the air.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling, Ray. Bye bye.
Oh, you're welcome.
See ya.
Back in the 1950s, DV, I sang doo-wop. I'm one of the original doo-woppers back from that era. Probably one of the few that are still alive. But yet, I had one of the first multicultural singing groups, but I never thought of it that way because our second tenor was a fine fella. I just loved the kid. He was Puerto Rican, and our lead was a black kid. And we just had fun, and we just never considered ourselves, diversified or anything like that. We just liked each other, and we sang, and that was the end of that. And now when I see all these programs promoting this stuff, I go, this is nonsense. I mean, the things that we just did naturally, now we have to do under some sort of government guidelines, and it just drives me nuts.
I know.
Do you have any opinion about if there was any government complicity regarding the actions of September 11, 2001?
Well, government versus individual. I believe, and I have to put on my tinfoil hat and get a drink of Kool-Aid here so I could qualify. In all seriousness, I believe that Dick Cheney was running the show.
Yeah.
I believe that this absurd story of Osama bin Laden running this operation from some cave over in Afghanistan is laughable at best, if it weren't such a tragedy.
Yeah.
I went to Shanksville, and I interviewed the EMTs and the witnesses, et cetera, et cetera. There's no question in my mind that the plane crashed exactly where it did. I filed a Freedom of Information Act against the FAA to get all of the takeoff and landings for Cleveland International, because there were white websites, the plane, you know, stating as fact that Flight 93 landed at that airport. Well, the FAA boys didn't want to play ball, so I filed a lawsuit in federal court and actually got, for the first time, a U.S. attorney with some, you know, backbone and some integrity, because he called me up on the phone and he said, I'm appalled that you had to file this lawsuit. He said, you are entitled to the records. And I said, well, the boys and girls over there at the FAA told me that all of their records had been turned over to the FBI. There's an ongoing investigation.
Yeah.
This was 2 years ago. And, you know, there was a million documents, and he said, that's just baloney. And he said, I will, by the end of the week, you will have the information in your hands. And it was overnight mail. And I have, and there was a Delta flight that I think people got mixed up with Flight 93. But when you look at all of the events of that day, the fact that there were five different operations going on at the same time, there were so many planes in the air for those operations that were fake terrorist, you know, operations going on. I believe our military were used to facilitate the crime. I don't know where Flight 77 is, but I do not believe that it crashed into the Pentagon. I believe people saw a plane. I did have a guest on my radio show about 2 months ago. Gosh, and I can't remember her name right off. April. April, I'll remember her last name in a minute. She was inside the Pentagon at the point of impact. She had just come back from maternity leave. She'd only been at her desk a few hours. She had her two-month-old son in her lap. And the next thing she knows, her life changed forever.
Right.
And she said that if it had been a plane full of, you know, jet fuel, she would have burned to death. But
right.
That's not what happened. She walked through the hole in the front of the building holding her baby.
I know that
she was a very, very good interview.
You know what? You know, I don't know what happened, but whatever the government is telling us is absolute nonsense. I watched an interview of a half dozen pilots of the 757, and when they were asked questions about, you know, the airplane hitting the Pentagon, they were actually laughing. They said, you know, we've been flying these planes for years, 10 years. And because of the air pressure at such a low altitude, as good as they think they are, they could never fly a plane that low straight into a building, not if their life depended on it. And they were laughing. They said it just cannot happen. And there were so many other things. And it really bothers me that there are so many unanswered questions. And I guess maybe 20 or 30 years from now, someone will finally write a book and all these people will come clean before they want to die or something, on their deathbed come clean, and then we'll know the truth. And it's just a shame that that's the way things are.
I think we're going to find out the truth before then, because even though it doesn't get as much media attention, there are thousands of very dedicated Americans out there who are focused on one thing and one thing only, and that is exposing the truth. Now, we have a very good shot at this, and I didn't know, I should have brought, I can't even think of this. There's a website, you might be able to find it on a search engine, just New York City Ballot Initiative Investigate 9/11. They are close to getting enough signatures right now, so if you know anybody who lives in New York City, getting an initiative on the ballot where the people will vote to have a brand new civilian investigation along with witnesses, a grand jury with the power of subpoena by the people.
That is fabulous. I know there's a Tulsa Truth organization here in Tulsa that also discusses about what happened in 9/11,
yeah,
and they would love to hear that. And I'm sure they're listening in also.
I mean, the polls out there, the last poll I saw was something like 58% of the people, and these are people who live there, affected.
Right.
58% said they don't believe the government's story and they want a new investigation.
Okay.
So they're very close to collecting the signatures to get on the ballot.
Right. That's fabulous. We have another...
I don't believe... I don't believe we're going to wait that long. I think something's going to crack.
I hope not. We have another caller. Let's see who this is.
Okay.
Caller, you're on the air. Your first name, where you're calling from, and your question, please. Thank you for calling Liberty Talk Radio.
Hi. Good evening. My name is Pat, and I'm in Tulsa. And I just pulled up DV's website, I guess, and it has reference to her CD, which I guess the title is Why is the U.S. Government Protecting Known Terrorists Here in the United States? And I wondered, what is that in reference to? Which terrorists regarding which events?
Okay. That is not my CD. This is a very lengthy piece written by a man named Patrick Briley. I've known Patrick. He lives in Oklahoma City. Okay. He's been on the Oklahoma City bombing since it happened. He is one of the most prolific researchers out there. He has a huge, long resume. This guy is a brilliant man. But Patrick has times, dates, places. Mueller, who's head of the FBI, and Patrick's written hundreds of columns about this, giving you absolute specifics. Mueller, head of the FBI, is dirty, just like Eric Holder's dirty. It's my desire that Eric Holder's going to go to jail in the cover-up of Michael Trent to do murder. Patrick, he can tell you where these people are, these Muslim cells in the United States, what congressmen are protecting them. As a matter of fact, I had him on my show 3 nights in a row on my radio show, and we went over it step by step, names, times, dates, places. Sometime in the future here, I'll be on the road again, and I have them replay that particular three series. But this piece you're talking about is written by Patrick, and like I said, it's very detailed. They are protecting these cells. They know where they are, and they're there for political expediency for when they need them, just like Oklahoma City. They knew these Muslim cells were in Oklahoma City. This was an operation that went bad, and they let the bad guys go.
And tell me again, Patrick's last name, please.
Briley. If you just click on that, you're on my website, just click on it, and it's 135 pages, and you'll see Patrick Briley's name. Mm-hmm.
That'll be interesting, okay, Pat. So interesting Saturday night reading, 135 pages.
It's truly sickening is what it is.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
I mean, these people are putting all of us at risk every single day. They know where they are. Patrick, when he was on my show, and I forget, so I'm not going to name the congressman, but he named 2 or 3 congressmen with all the documentation to back it up that are sympathetic to the Islamic cause, and they're protecting them. It's beyond an outrage. There's no such thing as a moderate Muslim. I mean, I have studied this more than I ever wanted to know in my entire life. I would love to have this guy, Dr. Peter Hammond, on my show, but we can't seem to coordinate because he's in South Africa. I met him in Alexandria, Virginia, a few years ago when I was out there seeing my friend Ben Parton, General Parton. But he wrote a book, I got it right here. It's called Slavery, Terrorism, and Islam, The Historical Roots and Contemporary Threat. It's one of the most documented histories of how that the desire of Muslims is to take over the world. And it is a bloody, violent 1,300-year history. Their quasi-religion demands that infidels be killed. So there's no moderation with their quasi-religion. It's the best book I've ever read on the issue.
Wow, fascinating. Why do you refer to it as a quasi-religion?
Because it's more of a system for them, that everything is thrown into this Sharia law. Uh-huh. And their worship of this Allah person, I guess I should say that, you know, I'm a Christian and I believe that there's only one God, the true God. But this guy that they claim to be God has such a horrific history. And their religion is one of absolute hate. It is one of, you know, these honor killings. If you're true to their, what they call their faith, it's no big deal to cut off your daughter's head because she looks at a boy here in the United States. If in their religion, it is an honor to stone women to death. I mean, it's sickening. But I just don't see it as a religion. I see it as a quasi-religion that they've worked into their government and stuff.
I see. Okay. Well, thank you very much for taking my call.
Thank you for calling in, Pat.
Have a good evening.
Right, bye.
Probably didn't give the answer that everybody.
Well, no, I think she. It was, you know, it's a very disturbing subject. We have about 2 minutes left. I'd like to leave those 2 minutes to you to broadcast whatever you'd like to say, because then I'll need about a minute to shut things down and whatever, and have our closing comments. But let me give these 2 minutes to you and talk about your website or anything else. It's all yours, Stevie. Go for it.
Thank you. I think probably what I'd like to end by saying is that what we touched on earlier, there are about 30,000 citizen groups in this country. There's a newly awakened segment of the population with the Tea Parties, but we've crossed the Rubicon, okay? It is down to survival.
Right.
I'm an unpaid board member for the Committees of Safety, committeesofsafety.org. We are on the move for when the state legislatures come back in January to do several things. Number one, we have to get an honest money bill passed in as many states as possible, because when the Federal Reserve crashes, and at the outside, you're going to see it in a year, 18 months at the most.
Right.
The states are not going to have any way to pay their bills, and neither are people.
Right.
The second, county by county, there's only 3,141 counties in this country. We have to look out for our survival and reconstitute the organized militia under the state legislature.
Right.
As required by the
right.
Second Amendment.
Correct.
So that's, we have to, like I said, take our country back county by county. And we can defeat Agenda 21 county by county.
Okay, agree. Well, DV, thank you so much for being our guest. It's been fascinating. We would love to have you back at maybe some later date, if you would agree to that.
No problem.
We enjoyed
Thank
being
you.
On the program, and if you will send me an email with your mailing address, I'd love to send, oh, and your t-shirt size, I'd love to send you a Liberty Talk Radio t-shirt.
Oh, that's very sweet. Thank you. I will send you an email.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And thank you very much, DV, and good evening.
Okay. Good evening.
Wow, that was interesting. She was great. She was great. Wow. This is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Grant Shakers Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends, and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away, or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal. The government hates competition." With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.